We are going to be recorded this morning, as we have the other lessons as well. These are being posted on the website, so if you've missed any of the lessons, you can get on the website, and I think Reed has all 3 weeks. We're already halfway done with this thing. I think he's got all three of them up. I know he has the first two up on the website, but anyway, welcome back to this series on a Christian view of work and career. And if you missed last time, what we talked about was a little bit of what's wrong with work. And this was something that I think all of us anticipated. I know there were a lot of comments the first 2 weeks, like, when are you going to talk about all the problems with work, you know? Well, that's what we got to last week. And we talked about Genesis 3 and what happened when Adam and Eve sinned and the curse that God pronounced. Cursed is the ground. He said to Eve, you know, with pain you're going to bring forth children, and your desire is going to be for your husband. He's going to rule over you. And to the man, he said, you know, you're going to, by the sweat of your brow, you're going to grow everything you eat. But when you plant wheat, thorns and thistles are going to come up instead. And we talked about the book of Ecclesiastes last week as well, which is kind of a commentary on Genesis 3 and how the writer of Ecclesiastes, and I'm going to go back into that a little bit here this morning, but the writer of Ecclesiastes, you know, he said, the King James Version says, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. There's a frustrating element to our work that we can't get away from, we can't deny. You don't even have to be a Christian to understand it, but we need to understand what the Bible says about the frustration of work. The original sort of commission, if you want to call it a commission from God, was to fill the earth and subdue it, right? Then when God pronounced the curse, he kind of cursed that. He put a curse on their efforts to do exactly what he had told them to do previously. So fill the earth, right? That means more people, right? But he says to Eve, with pain you'll bring forth children. So that part of the thing is cursed. That part of your work is cursed. And then subdue the earth. But to Adam he says, you're going to try to subdue the earth, but it's not going to lay over for you willingly. It's going to grow up thorns and thistles. So there's this curse is put on our work. Work is not a curse, but work is cursed. And there's a frustration, there's a frustrating element to it, that no matter what you do in your work, you fall short of what you would like to do. You have some success, right? A farmer goes out and plants some wheat. There is wheat that grows, and we get our daily bread, but thorns and thistles grow up as well. We can't do everything that we want. We can't get everything that we want out of our lives and out of our work. There's a frustrating element to it. Now, I want to continue kind of in that vein, but I want to talk about another aspect of the fall and sort of a more personal aspect. Last time we kind of talked about almost like the forces that are out there trying, that are working against you, right? The ground is cursed. But there's also this aspect of human nature that we have to talk about as well. Part of the problem with work, with people working, is people, right? Mm-hmm. Part of the problem with my career is, frankly, me, you know? So we all deal with a sinful, fallen nature. We all have desires in our hearts that are bent, that are crooked, that are away from God, outside the will of God. We take all of those things to our work, and it's bound to cause problems, right? It's bound to cause issues in our lives. So what we're going to talk about today is the idolatry of work. And I think all of us would agree that to not work is bad. I mean, especially here am I. All of us here are, you know, middle class Protestants. You know, the Protestant work ethic, you know, that people make jokes about it. Because, you know, in our tradition, this has been taught that, you know, you're a Christian, you're supposed to work hard, you're supposed to go to work, you're supposed to work for the glory of God. And I think all of us, I don't have to sit here and I'm preaching to the choir on that. For most of you here, you're all career people, you know. And so, but, you know, so should we work? Of course we should work. That's, you know, when we see people who aren't working, you know, it frustrates us, right? You know, people on welfare, the guy sitting on the corner of the street, you know, asking for money, you know, that kind of frustrates us. And rightly so in many ways. But there's an error in the opposite direction that does, I think, touch us directly. I don't think I have to tell you all to work, but I think the error in the opposite direction is making an idol out of our work. And that may be much more of a relevant conversation for people like us to have. So that's what we're going to talk about today. I think in American culture overall, I think we're seeing, you know, maybe more and more people who are not wanting to work. You know, we always think that our generation is the worst. You know, we always think that everything's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And maybe it is in some ways, but, you know, that's not really the problem in American culture. I don't think not wanting to work is the major problem in American culture. I think the major problem in American culture with work is making work and career into an idol. Okay. Now, maybe there are other cultures where the majority of people really don't want to work and they have a different issue, but I don't think that's our issue. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Okay. I'm not saying there aren't people
because,
that don't.
I mean, even non-Christian people recognize that making work an idol is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because they talk about work-life balance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not
that's
even
true.
Just us that know that it's, everybody knows it's a problem.
Right, yeah.
I think that people get their identity from work.
That's right.
So
yeah,
when I was a stay-at-home mom, you know, people would be like, oh, do you work? And I would be like, I stay home with my kids, but I have a degree in mathematics. And I, you know,
you have to apologize, yeah.
I felt like I had to, you know, which yeah. is bad.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about.
If people lose their jobs, then they don't know who they are anymore.
Yeah.
I went on a four-day retreat called a Crucio. And on the first night, you know, I'm a member of the team, and I'm talking to 30-odd other men who I've never met before. But one of the restrictions that we had in our conversations, we could not talk about work.
There is nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
How
about them Chiefs?
Well, I mean, we couldn't default to that simple conversation, which is work.
Right.
You know, what do you do? What do you and all that kind of stuff. And it was amazing how the conversation was different when you cut that out.
Yeah. I remember we talked a little bit about how in the Middle Ages, because of the influence of Aristotle and Greek philosophy, even the church in the Middle Ages kind of looked at work, at least physical labor, as being something you wanted to avoid, you know. And we talked about how the Bible critiques that. Now, then you get up into the modern era, okay? You get up into the Renaissance and with the Industrial Revolution and with the rise of secularism and humanism and the Enlightenment and all that, then then work became sort of everything. And we talked a little bit how, you know, somebody like Marx came along, and Marx was like, you know, we've got to work to make the world, you know, a better world. And there was this utopian understanding of work. And work is how we, in the modern age, work becomes how we fulfill ourselves, you know? That's our identity, as Ginger said, which is exactly right. But the Bible critiques that as well. So if you the Bible gets you either way. If you know, you can go to either extreme, and of course the flesh loves to go to extremes. You know, if you say, well, I don't want to work, well, the Bible says if you don't work, you're not going to eat. That's what Paul said. if you are going to make an idol out of your career, well, the Bible has something to say about that too. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So just to begin here, before I get into the meat of this, just kind of as a way of stirring our thoughts a little bit, and, you know, stop me if you have any thoughts or questions or comments as I go through this. But I've just got some quick little bullet points here of some of the problems with the idolatry of work. And the first problem, I think, is that when we make work into an idol, we see our work as a way to self-fulfillment rather than as a way of serving the needs of others. In other words, when work is an idol, we become selfish at work. Okay? And that's really the first point that we're going to get into here in a minute. I'm just kind of going through these as an introduction. And selfishness, you know, we've made the point that really culture and civilization and society is actually made possible by work. And the definition of work that I've thrown out there every single week has been that work is when we use our gifts and abilities to serve the needs of others, and they in turn use their gifts and abilities to serve us. But what happens in it? What happens to society if everybody's just self-serving all the time? I mean, if everybody literally was that way all the time, what would happen to society?
It wouldn't function.
It couldn't function, right? And I think we're beginning to see a lot of the fallout. From the, because Western society is so, it's all about self, right? Self-actualization and living your best life now, and what do you need to be happy, and all of that. And that undermines community. Now, I'm not saying that there's nobody, okay, who can literally never do anything for himself or herself. That's not realistic, okay? I'm not saying that you can be perfectly altruistic. Yeah. That's ridiculous. I understand that. But nevertheless, selfishness does undermine community, and it undermines work. And I think we're seeing that in our culture right now. Many of the troubles that we're having, I think, has to do with this radical modern individualism where it's the big I, you know, it's just all about me and who cares about you? And if you get in my way, I'm just going to run you over. And that sort of, you know, that sort of mentality, we take that to work and it causes all kinds of problems. Another problem with work, if work becomes an idol, is that folks begin to choose careers. And we talked about this a little bit. Folks begin to choose their careers based purely on money and status. So instead of thinking about, well, what can I do to help someone else? What are the needs that are out there? What gifts and stuff do I have to meet those needs? What the one question, especially like, you know, middle class people, you know, those of us who, you know, we were expected to go to college and get a career, you know, what questions are you asking most of the time when you're young is, how much money am I going to make? That's the first big thing. And I'm not saying it's not an issue, because if you can't make money, you can't live. I understand that. And there is such a thing as a just and fair wage, although I'm going to make the point later that's harder to come up with that than you might think it is. So I'm not saying, you know, that you shouldn't get paid for your work, or that shouldn't be an issue. But if money and status is the issue, that's a problem. And I think there are professions where people enter those professions mostly because of the money and the status. I think the two big ones are the medical field and the legal field. I think there's a lot of people that become doctors and become lawyers because they want the money and they want the cultural status that it brings. And there's nothing wrong with being a doctor and a lawyer, even a lawyer. But if that's the driving force, that's idolatry. Another issue is that when work becomes an idol and we become selfish, we begin to see other people not as people that we are serving, but as either obstacles in our way, right, or competition, or people we exploit other people, right? So either you're in my way, I want that promotion, you're in my way, and I'm going to undermine you every chance I get, right? Or, some guy down here, I'm going to use you to get the promotion. You know what I mean? You're exploiting someone, or you're pushing someone out of the way, you know, to get where you want to be. Another issue with idolatry at work is that we are seeking what is at the heart of this, and this becomes a pretty big deal. If work becomes an idol, we will inevitably seek to justify ourselves through our accomplishments at work. Now, all of us would agree that, especially because we're good Protestant evangelicals here, we would all agree that you cannot be justified by works, right? But most of the time we think of that in terms of religious works, okay? And even in the secular world, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, I'm not religious, you know, I'm not religious. So they're not out there, they're not like the monks in the Middle Ages that are climbing the steps of St. Peter's Basilica, kissing every step, trying to be justified by works. That's not what's going on in our culture, is it? But are people in our culture still trying to be justified by works?
Yes.
Absolutely. It's just secular works. It's accomplishments at work. And so even though we would all agree that we can't be saved by religious works, there's still a sense in which we can still seek our salvation, as it were, through our accomplishments, through our, say, I am successful because, or I feel good about myself because I did this or that, or the other.
Back to the status point.
Yeah, or what other people think about us. Yeah. Yeah. So that's another issue here. Now, the modern worldview is basically secular, which means, and this all goes back to what we call the Enlightenment. And what basically happened in Europe during this philosophical movement called the Enlightenment is that there was a concerted effort among the intelligentsia to put man at the center of things rather than God. Okay, so in the Middle Ages, even with all the problems that there was in society and in the church, there was still pretty much an agreement that God was the main thing in life, right? And in society, it was all about God. Okay, and secularism is saying, no, we're going to take God out. You don't have, you can be secular and not necessarily be an atheist. Okay, although that did come into it, but now man is at the center, right? It's man. And when they transfer that to work, then work becomes a way of mankind advancing his own agenda over the will of God. And that's what happens when work becomes an idol. I'm going to give you in a second, we're going to look at a biblical example, sort of the root of all of that. And I'm going to get my Bible out here while I'm thinking about it. So let me just pause. Anybody have any?
When secularism puts man back in the middle, it just reminded me of when Galileo was saying the sun is the center of the universe, not mm-hmm. Earth.
Right.
And everybody's like, no, it's Earth. And no, it's really the sun.
Yeah.
Which then is a nice, double entente with Christianity.
Yeah, there's a lot of philosophy going on behind that debate, yeah. But now man becomes the measure of all things, and so that has spread to every aspect of our society, including, of course, our work. I just watched, by the way, it's really interesting. I just watched a film about the moon landing. It's called Apollo 11. It's not a movie. It's actually a film that was made with all of original video that was taken up to the point where the astronauts, went on Apollo 11 and were launched, and then all this video from the actual landing on the moon and everything. And it was fascinating. It was really fascinating and pretty amazing if you think about it, that was actually accomplished, unless you're one of these conspiracy theorists who think it wasn't actually done. And I know those are folks out there, but I'm not one of them, just in case you're wondering. But it's pretty amazing, what people can do when we get together and get pointed in the same direction, to actually land somebody on the moon. That's an amazing accomplishment if you think about it. Think of all the things that have been all the work that have been accomplished because of, technology and just because we want to do it. But I got thinking, why did we do that? Why did we land a man on the moon? Well, that's exactly right. Yeah.
We wanted to beat them.
Yeah, because we were afraid. That's true. This is during a time when we were convinced that the Russians are, as soon as they're able, the Russians are going to bomb us.
Yeah.
If they get to the moon, they're going to shoot a missile at us from the moon and blow us all up. So we better get there first. Yeah.
They were like the Antichrist.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, okay, so, well, that was an amazing accomplishment. It took a lot of work. But why? What? Why did we do that? I don't know. I'm not saying that there weren't other benefits from the space race, because I think there were, and there's certainly benefit. I'm not anti-technology or anything like that. But when you look at some of the things that especially modern man has done, you ask, why are we doing that? I don't know. Do those questions ever come to your mind? They do to mine. I'm like, well, that's nice. It's nice that we're able to do that, but
What was the actual purpose?
Why did we do that? Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, we can build skyscrapers now. Why? Do we need skyscrapers? I guess if you're living in a big city, you got to go up. You can't go anywhere else because of geography, but I don't know. It's just, it's an example of, the essence of sin is man putting himself in the center of life. And we want to be in charge, and we want to rule our own fate. And sometimes I'm convinced, it's like, who was it? The first guy that climb Mount Everest? Didn't they? Is it, maybe this is just a joke. I don't know if this actually happened, but they asked him, why did you do it? He said, because it's there. You know, and there's that attitude, you know, in secular man. Why are we going to do this? Because we can, you know.
Well, don't you think that's part of, like, the creation mandate is to...
Well, it is.
The earth.
It is.
That people just intrinsically have that desire.
That's true.
To build and do things like that.
There is that. And I'm certainly not saying that desire in and of itself is bad, because I think it is the image of God. You know, monkeys didn't go to the moon. We went to the moon. I guess we sent a monkey first.
To space, not the moon.
But yeah. So there is something in man that we want to push the boundaries. We want to discover new things. And that's definitely a part of the image of God. I think that's exactly right. But then there's this sinful aspect of that. See, that gets twisted. And what do you have? You know, now, something else that happens when work becomes an idol. I think it's obvious that sin alienates us from God, right? We know that. But what actually happens too is that we get alienated from each other. And there becomes this competition and jealousy and conflict. And it's amazing what we can accomplish when we get pointed all in the same direction. But like, how often does that really happen?
Nowadays?
It doesn't happen very often, right? That's kind of what's so amazing about, you know, the moon landing and other feats like that. It's like, how did you get a group of people to all agree long enough to even get that done? You know how hard it is? You get a group of just, you know, 6 or 8 people together at work. You know, I don't know if you've ever had to be on a special team at a job or something. I was, you know, a supervisor in a plant, you know, so I had to get some guys to all work together. It was nearly impossible to get people that I knew, who knew me, we all got along, to get on a team, actually agree and get something done. It's like pulling teeth. It's impossible.
One heard that a camel is a horse designed by a committee.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what's the other saying? You know, to really mess something up, you need a committee or something like that. Yeah. Seems like the more people you get involved in it, the more frustrating it gets. And of course, and when we look at other, of course, it's easy for us to recognize the stuff in other people, right?
Well, yeah.
But it's not so easy to recognize that I have that in me too. Okay, as I'm frustrating Dave, you know, Dave's frustrating me. It's easy for me to say, well, it's his fault. It's not my fault. Well, it's our fault. It's both of us, because we both have that sinful nature. Now let me go back and review something about Ecclesiastes, because I want to pick up this conversation again. Last time we looked at the book of Ecclesiastes, and we talked about how he did 3 experiments with his, you know, what is worth doing in life. Well, the first thing he tried was wisdom. I want to be wise. And he said, well, it's better to be wise than to be a fool, but wisdom has its ceiling. It doesn't give ultimate meaning. Secondly, he tried pleasure. He said, no, that doesn't do it either. Just having a good time, enjoying myself. That didn't do it. Then he tried achievement and work. He built things, you know. He had fancy gardens and forests of trees and, you know, all these things he built. And he said, after I built it all, he says, no, that's not it. And he said the problem with that is that, first of all, nothing you do is literally going to last forever. There really are no literally lasting eternal achievements. And secondly, he says, no matter how hard you work, I understood that eventually I'm going to die. And then who's going to get it? Well, maybe some idiot is going to run my company into the ground after I, you know, after I'm done.
Which is true for Solomon.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. And then others, you know, no matter what you accomplish in life, people are going to kind of forget about you, and you're not going to be remembered in the next generation of people. And so that was the conclusion of Ecclesiastes. He's like, everything under the sun is basically meaningless. And yet everything that Solomon, if it was Solomon that was the writer of Ecclesiastes, everything that he experimented with are still the things that in American culture we are pursuing. It's still what makes the world go around. Everything that Solomon tried, it's either education, I'm going to be smarter, it's pleasure, I'm going to enjoy myself, and I'm going to get a good job so I can make a lot of money so that I can enjoy myself even more, or it's accomplishment. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to become famous because I'm going to build that company. I'm going to invent that scientific thing or whatever it is, and I'm going to become famous. Those are still the things, right, that everybody's after. Even though Solomon said, I tried it, been there, done that, didn't work, it doesn't work. It's ultimately meaningless. We talked about this too, that in the modern world, we have so many more choices, right, for our work. Has that made everything easier for us?
No.
I don't think so. You know, we talked about how in the Middle Ages, you were kind of locked in. You know, if your father was a butcher, you were probably going to be a butcher. If your father was a blacksmith, you're going to be black. There were these, in the Middle Ages in Europe, there were these class systems, you know, that were pretty locked in. And even Luther, when Luther came along, he didn't really question that. The Calvinists, the later the Calvinists did. And in the modern world, you know, if you have the ability, you can go to school and become a doctor if you want to, if you have the ability and the opportunity. Doesn't matter if your dad was a, you know, ditch digger. You can do that in our society. But that's created a lot of more angst, I think. You know, what should I do? And this is something that young people ask. And unfortunately, when work becomes an idol, as I said before, we choose those jobs based on, A, I'm going to make a lot of money, or two, there's a coolness factor. You know, there's some jobs that are just cool. Like if you do that job, everybody's going to go, ooh, that's, ooh, no.
Math teacher.
Huh?
Math teacher.
That is pretty impressive. I admit, I could not be a math teacher, Ginger. That's above my head. Or we choose jobs that just simply make us feel good about ourselves, right? We're in it. We're still in it for me. And this job makes me feel like, you know, I'm a good person. And so you could even, you know, even if you're not in it for the money and you go in, let's say you go into the nonprofit sector, right? Well, there may be people that go into the nonprofit sector. They're not in it for the money because there's not a lot of money in the nonprofit sector, but it makes them feel good about themselves, right? I'm a good person because, hey, I'm helping people, and it's still about them.
Yeah, it's like false.
Yeah, it's still about them. So that raises this question, and I wanted to talk about this last week, and we ran out of time. But so how in the world do we choose a job and a career then? As Christians now, I'm talking about from a Christian worldview. What do you do? How do you decide what to do? This has been a huge, I'll be honest with you, this has been a huge issue in my own life because I started out in ministry, right? And then I decided I needed to get out of professional ministry and out of the denomination I was in. So then the question became, what do I do? And I don't think I ever really answered that question, not to my own satisfaction. So what do you do? How do you know the career you're in right now is the right career? How do you know the job you're in right now is the right job? Should you be doing something else? Should you be looking for something else? Did you make the right choice? These are for a lot of people, these are...
Paul said, you know, stay in the situation you're in. So,
yeah.
And so, I mean, to the analogy is to how do you know you married the right person? Check the name on the, you know, marriage certificate. So how do you know if you're in the right job?
Right.
If your job isn't overtly sinful and hurting people,
yeah,
you know, you should probably just stick with...
Yeah, I think you can make a good case for that. I mean, can you be in the wrong job too?
Maybe.
Maybe some people are in the wrong job. There are people who chose a career that they're not very good at, but they chose it just because they wanted to make the money that it made, or because it was cool. But they're not very good at it.
Yeah, I think your question presupposes that there is a right career.
Okay.
Or that there's a wrong one. Or a wrong one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
For any particular. You said as a Christian.
Right.
I grew up constantly hearing, well, you need to make the right decision so that God will be in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, God's in everything.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a right place to live or a wrong job to have.
Right.
If you're doing it for the right reason, which is glorifying God, then God will be there.
No.
And I was thinking through some of your commentary earlier, and I think that what's, you know, kind of freeing is the fact that we can go build skyscrapers or figure out an artificial heart or do any of this because it's within the creation mandate.
Yeah.
It's marred.
Right.
Yeah, of course we'll sin. even as Christians.
Sure.
But I feel like a tremendous empowerment.
Okay.
In that, go rule the earth.
Yeah.
And subdue it. Because I think God is pleased by that.
I do. I agree.
And even by non-believers, that's because of common
that's
grace.
Right.
That's right.
Common grace.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but it's easy to think about that because this is, you're teaching on the subject of idolatry. So naturally, I want to resist and say, no, it's not an idol for me. I feel this empowerment.
Right.
But so I see the other, you know, I see that side of it. But I do think you can just have a tremendous amount of freedom, especially as a Christian.
That's true.
To say, I'm in this career because it's the one I want.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I need to examine my heart. Right. If there's, idolatry.
Right.
You know, that's bad.
Yeah. Well, I would definitely say for a Christian, I'm not saying you shouldn't consider what the income is going to be when you get that job, because especially now that you go to college and you borrow 50 grand, you know.
Yeah, that might not be.
You better have something you can do with that degree, or you're going to be defaulting on your student loans. So I'm not saying that money isn't a consideration, but certainly money can't make it primarily about
right.
I'm going to choose
not
this job. Yeah, just because of money. You can't make it just about, you know, what makes you feel or look good, you know, just for other people to praise you or just because it makes you feel like you're a good person. You have to look at what others actually need, because there are those professions that they're out there, but they're not really contributing. They may not even, some professions are just outright immoral, okay, and we all understand that. There are other professions that are kind of, they're not necessarily overtly immoral, but you have to wonder, is that really something that I want to be involved? There are some, as a Christian, there are some things, jobs I could get that are not immoral or illegal, but I wouldn't take that job because, frankly, I just don't feel like it's really doing anybody any good. Now, there may be different opinions on those. There may be some Christians say, I could take that job. It doesn't bother me. Yeah, it doesn't matter my conscience. But there are those issues. I want to do something that fits my gifts. You know, I don't want to be a math teacher.
Yeah.
I'm not good at math. Okay, I want to do something that fits who I am. I'm not going to pigeonhole myself and say, well, there's a lot of job openings for math teachers right now. I think I'll be a math teacher. Bad idea. Okay, I would not be a good math teacher. You should look for something that's good to do for its own sake. Is there a career or job you can get into that's just, it's just a good field to be in? I think there are those kinds of fields. I think medical field is basically, you know, I don't know about plastic surgeons, but maybe some plastic surgeons actually work on people that have been burned and things like that. So even that could be redeemable. You see what I'm saying? That's just that there are fields like that. That field is, we need doctors. We always need teachers. We're always going to need teachers. That's a noble field. It's good for its own sake. You can be a teacher. You're not going to make a lot of money.
No.
You know, you're probably not going to be praised even a lot all the time. From every teacher I've ever talked about, it's like, you know, the parents are awful, you know, that sort of thing. You feel like you're in the crossfires of society all the time. But it's a good thing to do, though. It is. You should look for something like that. I think you have to look, and this goes back to Ecclesiastes, you have to look for something in between living and, you know, poverty, which is no good. If you can't make a living, it's no good. And or killing yourself to get rich, you know, those are the kind of the two extremes, you know. Do I have to either live in poverty or kill myself to get rich? I should probably do something in between those extremes, right?
Be a centralist.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, was anything that Solomon did actually useless, or was his perspective merely wrong? He was striving to identify why he was unhappy, and he realized nothing he was doing was making him happy. But when you look at what he did, I mean, he built the temple. He brought wealth to his. The problem was, is he wasn't looking at, look what I've been able to do for God. He was looking at, look what I have done, and I'm still unhappy.
Yeah.
And that's to me the same thing with anything. Is if it doesn't matter how much money you do or don't make. If you go into it, how can I glorify others and bless, glorify God and bless others? It doesn't. There are some people who should make as much money as they can because they're going to bless others with that. And there's some people that shouldn't make a lot of money because that's a pitfall for them and they're not going to bless others.
Well, to go back to what you said before, I think the question that Solomon was asking is not just, does it make me happy? He was asking, what can I do that has ultimate meaning?
Everything.
But nothing that he did in and of itself answered that question. Building stuff does not give ultimate meaning. Not ultimate meaning. That's what I think he means when he says it's meaningless. I don't think he's saying it's completely useless, like what you were saying. The question he's asking is there anything in life under the sun that I can do that I can ascribe ultimate meaning to? And every time he says, nope, it's not that, it's not that, it's not that. You see what I'm saying?
But everything we do has ultimate meaning. It's perspective. A wife taking care of her children has ultimate meaning. The guy picking up the trash on the side of the road has ultimate meaning. It's all perspective.
Well, I think I know what you're saying.
His perspective was wrong. It wasn't what he was doing.
That's the whole point.
Yeah, his perspective was completely wrong.
Yeah.
The smartest man on earth missed the point.
Well, there's some truth in what you're saying.
We're
calling
him out on it.
Yeah. Well, like for example, you know, someone who, you know, is a like Jonathan. Jonathan is a, you know, he is a garbage man. That's what he does. You know, that's certainly a job in our culture to be like, you know, that's not really a job that has a lot of cultural clout. But I'm glad he does it. I'm glad there are garbage men, because think of the chaos that would exist if there were suddenly no garbage men. Mm-hmm. But yet, picking up garbage is not the ultimate meaning of life. You know what I'm saying?
I think that's the mistake, is looking for ultimate meaning in anything.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I think that's what Solomon is saying as well. Yeah. Yeah. And
he says it without saying it.
That's
the whole book.
Yeah. I don't know that his perspective is wrong. His perspective is limited, because he says this is everything under the sun. Solomon doesn't get into the kingdom of God and eternal life, and he doesn't get into any of that. He just looks around and observes what's going on in a fallen world. And he says, can I attach ultimate meaning to this activity? No. Can I attach ultimate meaning to this activity? No. It's not that those activities were wicked
or have no meaning.
Right.
Although he does kind of say that.
Well, he says it. Yeah. But he says it. He says it in response to his original question. His original question is does it have ultimate meaning? And the answer to that is you can't make life all about this. That's what he's saying. Does that make sense? You see what I'm saying?
I do, but I think that comes to the crux of what you're trying. You know, the whole discussion when it comes to work is, we look down on we either put our careers on a pedestal or we look down on them because we're
right.
not a preacher or
right.
a missionary.
Right.
These jobs have ultimate meaning because they're
right.
directly related to Christ and his work, and we're pushing.
Right.
All I'm saying is, to me, if it's less about what you do but why you do it, if you're striving to worship God
right.
in what you do,
right,
then what you do, regardless of what it is, does have a...
And that's exactly right.
Because you're
worshiping
God
right.
with your hands or your brain
right.
or your voice.
Whatever you're doing.
But...
is ultimately... It's all perspective.
But in that case, though, the thing you're doing is not the ultimate thing. It's God that's the ultimate thing. And that thing becomes sanctified in the context of your worship of God. Right? Well, because if you're doing...
What you're doing is worshiping God.
What you just said, which is exactly right, okay? So I'm not arguing with what you're saying. But you have made God the ultimate thing. Therefore, everything else is, gets in line behind that.
Okay,
there we go. That's right. So you're right. You're absolutely right. But the but idolatry is never works that way. Because in idolatry, God is not first. By definition, an idol is first. Okay? And so that affects everything else behind it, including the job, right? Is there anything wrong with being a doctor? Absolutely not. But if being a doctor is your God, that's the problem. And there's going to be problems that stem from that too. Okay? I'm not saying non-Christian people can't be good doctors. I hope that's not true. I think my doctor's probably not a Christian. He's a good doctor. Let's talk a little bit more about money here, because I think that looms very – money in and of itself is an idol, and of course it's closely tied to work. Isn't it funny how most of us always think we're underpaid? Does anybody ever think, I make too much money?
I genuinely believe that my bus driving, that we make too much money.
But really?
Okay. Oh, yeah. I kind of felt that way going into Oklahoma. So my first year in Oklahoma, we had the teacher strikes. And when I went to my job in Oklahoma, I was actually making more than I had ever made as a teacher. So I was like, I'm really okay, guys. Whatever's clever. I'm really happy.
Well, how do you know that you're getting paid enough or too much or not enough? How do you know that?
I don't know.
How do we determine what a fair wage is? This goes right to the heart of the whole political argument about the minimum wage, right? Mm-hmm. What should my philosophy on the minimum wage is, let's just make it $100,000 a year and be done with it. Wouldn't that solve the problem?
Yeah.
Everybody makes $100,000 a year, problem solved.
Yeah.
Right?
No.
What I know, but how do we decide that? You know, there's always that magic number too, $15 an hour. That's it. That's if you made $15, well, what's going to happen? As soon as everybody's making that, it's not going to be enough.
Right, because everything will be more.
Because now the doctor's got to make twice that.
Yeah. So this is a moving target. This is a really, really tough. But what happens is, if money is your idol, though, do you see how much discontent and arguing and fussing and fighting comes from that idol? Okay, if that's, you know, and that's why, you know, Paul in 1 Timothy, he says money is the root of all kinds of evil. He doesn't say money is the root of all evil. That's always the misquote.
Right, the love of money.
The love of money, yeah, I'm sorry. That's a misquote too. Just to illustrate that. here's what Paul said in 1 Timothy 6. He says, godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world. We cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, and into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. Now, you don't even have to be a Christian. Even secular people know that if you literally make your whole life about money, that's wrong.
Well, one of the greatest movies ever that I never watched until I was, you know, in my late 50s is Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
And if you're familiar,
that is a great movie.
That movie should terrify you. And one of the great, I mean, besides the final scene where it goes, you know, he's dead and they're like panning all of the stuff he'd collected. And,
right.
You know, talk about Ecclesiastes. I mean,
yeah.
But no, what a great, great lines in that movie when they were interviewing his personal assistant and he's like the CEO of something and he's standing at the, you know, the old glass covered ticker tape thing. And he's looking at the stock market stuff and he's talking and he said, he held it up and he goes, you know, money's easy to get if that's all you want.
Yeah.
It was an incredible line.
That is.
It typified the main character's life.
Yeah.
But back to your point about what sets wages and stuff, it really depends on the market milieu or atmosphere. Because
I know it does, yeah.
You have to look at wages as a commodity, just like you look at milk or soybeans or something like that. And so I think that's the answer. In a
free market economy.
It's driven by market pressures.
But what my point was, Is there?
But then you get the individuals who say, hey, wait a minute, that's just not fair that he gets that much and I get this much.
Right.
And who, people who say that are just betraying their ignorance of how an economy works.
Right.
And then we've got, oh, never mind, this is going to get really dark. So.
Well, but in response to that, though, is there a book that we can go out and say, well, the Book of Wages says that this is what you should make?
No, because
that doesn't exist.
It's that famous invisible hand.
Yeah.
Well, of, you know what they do? You know how they solve that problem in communism?
Right. They cut everyone's
miserable.
Well, no, literally what they did in communism is they have a guy in the government who sets all the wages.
Yeah. And it never works.
So,
it's because it's a guy. That's
we solve that problem.
Just like rent control and
right.
Gasoline price freezes and
yeah.
food price doesn't work here in our...
Well, I think to answer your question of, you know, what sets that living wage, you know, Paul points
yeah.
out if you have food and you have clothing, and I think that in our modern society, we have to build a little bit more on that. You probably need modern accommodations like
yeah.
electricity and water and heat, but I think what a lot of people struggle with and the stumbling is when we're like, well, but I don't have the newest iPhone. I don't have
right.
the newest car. I don't have the biggest house
and
or a bigger
you
house.
Enough that you'll go out in the street and throw bricks and,
right.
and burn stuff down.
Right,
yeah.
which
I mean,
is super helpful for building right. economies.
No,
and
well, let's we're just about out of time. So, but before we go, let's read and think about probably the greatest biblical example of the idolatry of work, and I'm referring to Genesis 11 and the Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's what it says. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words, and as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there, and they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. I don't know what bitumen is, but they had it for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. Now what's wrong with that picture? Is it wrong to build a city with a tower?
No, it's wrong to make a name for yourself.
It's wrong to suppress the truth about God.
That's true.
Take that out of the issue.
Right.
And perfect humanity.
Where's God?
Yeah.
Where was God in their discussion? Nowhere. Nowhere.
Isn't that ultimately why we went to the moon? To prove God wasn't out
there? Well, that was that cosmonaut. I think it was the Russian cosmonaut, the first guy that orbited the Earth. Didn't he get up there and actually said, I don't see God anywhere?
Yeah.
Wow. It's amazing he made it back down to Earth.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, when you were talking about why do we build skyscrapers, that was the first thought I thought of.
Yeah.
It's the Tower of Babel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This goes back to what Ginger said at the very start, is that this whole thing about making a name for yourself, that's identity.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying, we're gonna make, our identity is going to be wrapped up in this work that we're doing. And it had nothing to do with God. And if you want an interesting, if you're studying Genesis, okay, it's really helpful to go from Genesis 11 and to what those people said right into the life of Abraham. Because Abraham is the exact opposite of everything that those people were saying at the Tower of Babel. Because what was Abraham's life about? Faith. It was about faith in God's promise, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
His whole life was wrapped around this promise that he had from God, and trusting God's promise and trusting God. Abraham got rich, by the way.
Yeah.
God made him rich, though.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham didn't make Abraham rich. God made Abraham rich. So there's a.
And Abraham was fine with that.
Yeah. Here's a good closing verse. I think I want to read this verse. I come back to this a lot in my own thinking, and especially when I think about, you know, my work and my money and that sort of thing. 1 John, this is so practical. 1 John 2, verses 15 to 17. This is a really good verse to just have in your mind, okay, as you go out into the world to work. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, that's your first priority, okay? The love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away along with its desires. But whoever does the will of God abides forever. So whatever idol it is that people make out of their work, you know, something C.S. Lewis said is that, you know, the idols that we make eventually are going to break our hearts. It's going to be, what is it they say? Nobody on their deathbed says, I wish I had spent more time at work. Mm-hmm. That idol eventually crumbles, doesn't it? That idol crumbles. It can't sustain you with ultimate meaning. Only our relationship with the Creator can do that. And what we're going to talk about now, we got two more weeks, okay, before we break for the Christmas holiday. We don't have Sunday school in December. What we're going to talk about now is we're going to talk about how the gospel is going to inform our view of work and how we go about doing our work. So this is kind of the negative side of it, right? Idolatry, definitely don't want to make work an idol. So how do we approach work then? How do we as Christians apply the gospel to our work? That's what we're going to get into. Okay? Any final thoughts? All right.
That's good.
Have a good week.